Choice and Control is a podcast celebrating meaningful inclusion of people with disability in our communities. Brought to you by Carers Queensland, your NDIS local area coordination partner in the community. Each episode provides a conversation space for people with disability, their families and carers, to share their stories with you. We also hear from members of the wider community, local businesses and community leaders who share information, ideas and possibilities to give you more opportunity and more choice and control in your life. The theme for this year's NAIDOC Week celebrations is Keep the Fire Burning, Black, Loud and Proud. Carers Queensland recognises the strength and vitality of First Nations people and continues to work together with local communities to support First Nations people with disability and carers. By continuing the journey to reconciliation within Australia, we have developed our own Reconciliation Action Plan as we strive to create social change and economic opportunities for First Nations Australians, built on trust, respect and collaboration. Our first guest in this episode is Auntie Paula Wooten, a proud Tharawal woman of the Yuin Nation, artist and respected elder of the local community. I started by asking Auntie Wooten what Keep the Fire Burning means to her.
That means to me is about keeping the fire burning and keeping it alive. It's culturally significant as this is the place where we used to do business, hold ceremony. Our mob yarned up around the fire. We held discussions, eat meals together. So we actually need to keep these traditions alive and keep that fire burning for the next generation.
Can you tell me about some of the work that you do, Auntie Paula?
I've worked in community for probably about 25 years now. So these years I'm actually on been on the board for about 17 years now for North Coast Health, which is in the Sunshine Coast region. I'm also on the board of Maroochydore Murray Court for the Community Justice Group. And we've just recently started a new organisation called Mob for Mob, and that's for having a voice for people with disabilities in our mob. And we align ourselves with the UNCRPD, which is United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And besides that, I'm also an artist and I do workshops in schools and community too, so I'm quite busy.
Through Mob to Mob, what are you hoping to achieve there?
We're actually, as I said, an organisation founded by Blackfellas with Disabilities. So we're going to be a voice for our mob in Queensland. And our mission is to raise issues impacting on mob in areas such as education, health, housing, the justice system, transport, all from a cultural perspective.
What strategies are you going to put in place to try to combat some of those issues?
Well, as we've just started out, we've just recently received our funding and recently, because we've just got back from New York, our first point of call is to have a meeting and work out our strategy, exactly what we're going to tackle first. But our goal is to go throughout Queensland, out to country, talk to mob, find out what's working in their community, what's not working in their community. You know, how can we make things better? What needs fixing, etc. So our funding has just come in, so we're really looking forward to making the first step in getting it up and running.
With First Nations supports and providers, what needs to happen more in the disability community for First Nations people?
Right, because we've already been working in the community and working with alongside people with disabilities for a number of years, we've already heard that those areas that I explained before, education, health, housing, the justice system and transport, They are the areas that we have already highlighted that need to be assessed, and we'll see what comes after we do our assessments and go travelling the country and talk to MOB about how those things, how we can make them better for them, or what needs fixing and what actually works as well. That's also important, what actually is working for them. So we can take that then back to the government and see how we can help change those things for the better.
And just from your initial research, what is working?
Well, as you know, the NDIS has been an issue, and it's actually being assessed at the moment. It probably is a good model, but it definitely needs amendment. And so that's good, because what we're over in the over in New York for the United Nations, Phil Shorten had a function that we attended, and actually at the United Nations convention, he actually announced that Australia was looking to do an overview of the NDIS. So that's going to be interesting, and we'll be following where that takes people with disabilities in Australia. Well, the NDIS doesn't actually include culture in the way that they deliver services. So that is another issue that we actually want to focus on, and bring culture into disability in ways that how we can help Aboriginals with disabilities.
What are some of those differences that you think should be implemented there?
It's hard to say, because just initially straight out, because it's different for people in different communities. So, what's okay for one family isn't okay for another. So it really relies on past culture, where that family's come from, what country that family lives on. So it's actually really hard to say right here, right now, what that specifically is, because it's different for everybody.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's just a very personal approach that needs to happen.
That's right. And when people do voice their opinions on this isn't right, you should be doing X, Y, Z for us, those voices are falling on deaf ears. And so that's what we would like to try and, change the process, I guess.
So that your voice is heard.
That's right. Yes. Yes. And the voices of, those people that are in need of help are heard.
You mentioned there that you've just been to New York. Can you tell me about that experience, please?
I've been back for about a week, and I'm still overwhelmed at what actually took place over there. It was, besides being mind-boggling, it really surprised me how listening to all the voices of everybody from all over the world, it really surprised me that everybody is on the same page about getting people with disabilities, getting services to help those people with disabilities, and getting the right services for, everybody. Again, everybody's different. Their disabilities all need different needs, and how everybody was all on the same page about making things better. So awesome for me to hear that everybody was really on the same page, and it didn't matter what country they came from, everybody was on the same page. I went there just with, didn't have any expectations in mind, just to sit back and listen. So it was just, for example, we had a young fellow from Australia that had Down syndrome, and he spoke on, I think it was 5 occasions at the United Nations, very well spoken and very powerful speaker. So we were so proud of him, first of all, to come from Australia, but to speak as well as he did, and the powerful speech that he delivered was just mind-blowing to us. Everybody was talking about him. And then just on our own accords of the people that I went with, we were there to deliver our the messages of our own art pieces. Our own art was, for example, Uncle Paul gave each artist an article to paint, and so that article was to depict the interpretation of that artist for that particular article that was given. For example, one of my articles to paint, and these articles are from the UN, so my article was Article 25 and 26, which related to health and goods and services. So the caption was, you have the right to be able to access culturally respectful services, supports and equipment that will help you and stay healthy, independent and strong in your areas of your life, such as relationship, family, community and culture. So that was just one example of one of the articles, and then each artist painted their interpretation of that article. And so we went to the UN with our art. We displayed our art pieces, and we were a massive hit. So literally all of our art and our meanings of our art for people with disabilities have reached every corner of the planet of the world. So people were absolutely astounded at our art. We had a really massive, fantastic, positive reception. And throughout that, we actually gained a number of invitations, and one of those was to go to Seoul next year. So we're over the moon about that.
Oh, congratulations. What an incredible effort and reception you received.
Yeah, so we were just so shocked and surprised that we never imagined that that's what would happen for our little arts group back here in Australia, in Queensland. And so, yeah, we're really looking forward to now where our art exhibition is going to take us.
And do you think you'll be heading off to Seoul?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
What will that conference be about?
Well, all that I gathered was they were over the moon with our art exhibition, and they asked us to bring the art over and give an exhibition over there. So we will learn more when Uncle Paul gets back and liaises with them. And so we'll find out shortly exactly what will take place over there. So, but, you know, what an opportunity, and it's a real honour to be invited over there to represent not only people with disabilities, but our little art group called Noonaron from the Sunshine Coast to go to Seoul and represent our mob from Queensland. So, and also I need to say too is we're also in partnership with QAI, which is Queensland Advocacy for Inclusion. So none of this would have taken place without them and their partnership as well.
When you said that you painted one of the articles, how did you capture the article in your artwork?
First of all, I read the caption and I struggled, and I had to sit and think for a while. And being Aboriginal, we're very spiritual people. And I must say the spirits helped me out on this one, and it just suddenly came to me. So I quickly drew it down and captured it that way, and then literally sat down and started painting.
Do you know what it's going to look like when you start painting, or is it more of an organic process?
It's organic, and it's also spiritual, because sometimes we'll literally start with a symbol and it just grows from there. Sometimes we don't know where our paintings are going, and it just flows as we paint it. Just, you know, the paintbrush just takes us there. So, but very rarely, personally, do I know what it's going to look like before I start. I'll just start in the centre of the piece and it just grows.
You spoke earlier about your artwork being guided by spirit. How long have you been an artist for, Auntie Paula, and was this a calling for you?
I've always been like an artist since I was only in, you know, very young at school. I used to always win all the art competitions, you know, community competitions, whatever I went into, I usually won. So, but I didn't actually start doing art pieces to, you know, for art galleries and that for about 20, or probably over 25 years ago now.
And that process of painting, has that changed for you over the years?
Yeah, some of my earlier pieces, I started off with probably what I would call simple pieces of art, and these days I do more detailed, more complex art. For example, my main theme, I guess, is I'll do my symbols or pictures throughout the art piece, and then I do particular dots, and I carry that shape in the middle. I carry that shape using dots right throughout the whole art piece, so it gives like a hypnotic effect. Mm. So in the past, I had art pieces sold at the Goodwill Games, and the fellow that was managing all the art exhibition, then he said, "You've really got something there." So he was the one that encouraged me to continue doing that style, and so it's led into bigger and better things just by that one comment. So, yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I've also learned along the way that people with disability gain a lot from doing visual art. And I can imagine for First Nations people, it has that extra layer of spiritual value as well.
Yes, because as I mentioned before, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are very spiritual people. So personally, doing art is a spiritual process for me, and I've often heard of many other artists speak exactly, you know, about the exact same thing. So, in beginners, we encourage beginners. We say, maybe if you add this, or you were talking about this, so how about you pop that in your art? So we encourage people to make their art grow, and the same process that I went through with my art. So, for example, we had a beautiful artist on the Sunshine Coast with disabilities. He used to start with an art group. Oh, I can't remember how many years ago I started with him, and to look at his first lot of art, it was, you know, from a young childhood age group, and then from now, here he is showing his art at the United Nations. Absolutely
incredible.
Beautiful. And Uncle Paul Calcott taught him and brought that beautiful art piece out of him with the help of Uncle Paul. Just amazing. You know, some people think that doing your art is, like it must be hard for us to concentrate to do it, but it's actually not. It's actually relaxing, and it takes us in a place somewhere else other than, you know, what's around you. You just like fall into your art and just go into another world while you're doing your art. So it's very peaceful and relaxing.
As mentioned earlier, Auntie Paula Wooten joined Uncle Paul Calcott to present their artwork at the Conference of State Parties to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, held in New York City. I asked Auntie Paula what she personally gained from attending and presenting at the conference.
Personally, the exposure of being an artist, so it was about promoting my own art, but that was very small, that wasn't the main reason of going. It was about promoting our art group, promoting our art and the messages. It was the United Nations messages that were in those art pieces. That was the main reason why we went to the United Nations. Mm. And just the exposure that we got and the way that it was received from everybody around the world, we sat down later on and I said to Uncle Paul, but you do realise now that we literally, our art group is known worldwide now. And that just blew our minds.
You've gone international, Auntie Paula.
We sure have. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, well, look, thanks for the chat today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for that. It was great talking to you. Thank you.
And that was Auntie Paula Wooten, a proud Tharawal woman of the Yuin Nation, artist and respected elder of the local community.
The
Theo Frescon, a Yuibara man from Ipswich, recently accepted the position of Ipswich Carers Queensland Reconciliation Action Plan chairperson to share his lived experience of disability and bring a strong First Nations voice to the table. I caught up with Theo and started by asking him about his plans for his new role.
Theo, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Tracy. It's great to have this opportunity to be on this podcast with you.
Recently, you decided to accept the role of chairperson for the Ipswich Carers Queensland Reconciliation Action Plan. Theo, what are you hoping to achieve in the role to keep the fire burning for First Nations people in your community?
First thing I want to achieve through that said role is more connection within my local community and find out how the fire is currently burning for First Nations people. Since living in Ipswich, I haven't had too much connection per se, as I've very much kept to myself, but through the opportunities that have presented themselves, I would really like to change all that, and especially since having my daughter, who was born here in Ipswich, if I can establish a connection with the Indigenous community that we have here, then it can connect with my very small family unit and potentially put in stepping stones for the future to keep that fire burning.
When we think about the fire and keeping it burning, what are we really talking about there?
Well, from my experience as a First Nations man and growing up in what would have been a very political time, such as marches that were held in Brisbane for Native Title and all that sort of stuff, I think now we can sort of move forward from the recognised state or the recognised Indigenous rights to now working of how we go forward as not just First Nations people but the people of Australia. I'm very proud to be an Indigenous man, but I'm also very proud of the multiculturalism and the overall acceptance that we can have in positive light as an Australian citizen as well.
Do you feel that as a First Nations man, you have the right supports in your life that respect and honour your culture?
I'm still finding what exactly that means to have the right supports in place. Through the NDIS, I would like to, or through my funding through the NDIS, I would like to eventually go potentially on a bit of a walkabout and learn more about not just where I live in southeast Queensland, but different parts of Australia. To be specific, I have on the list, I'd like to go and see the 10th Embassy down in Canberra. That was established the same year that I was born, 1988. And from what I've heard, just word of mouth, it's still going strong today. So that's just one of the things that I would like to experience and have more of a connection of what it really means to be a First Nations man, not only where I live and where my community is, but the experiences that this great continent can provide.
You talked there about going on walkabout to learn more. Is that what the purpose
Yes.
would be?
To definitely learn more from different cultural groups, to learn more about different areas of how we define ourselves as First Nations people, to be specific there, how First Nations people would paint themselves for ceremony or how they would dress for dance and how that changes depending on where you travel within Australia. And of course, the different dances and stories that we tell through both painting and dance. I would love to have that life experience, whereas I feel so far as a young Indigenous man, I've only really experienced Queensland. So I was born in Brisbane and I was in a young dance troupe growing up in Serena, up in North Mackay, and just learned some basic stuff through that as a kid, but I've never really expanded on that as an adult.
Why is that becoming an important part of your current life? Is there something, what's driving you now? Has something changed?
I really think that it is the most recent NAIDOC campaigns, not just the Keep the Fire Burning, but previous NAIDOCs where it's for our elders and connections with elders. For myself personally, that particular campaign had me thinking about what sort of elder do I want to be when the time comes. I've had a very small and, I dare say, sheltered life in the way of Australia, and especially becoming a father. I want to move on from the political turmoil that I experienced as a young kid growing up, and you know, especially my mother was very much heavily into black politics, and she has some very strong views, which I'm very proud of as well. But I want to be able to move forward and give my daughter a progressive narrative. I don't want to necessarily be stuck in the past. I also want to be able to move into the future in a positive light. So I'd say the biggest motivator in this change is becoming a father and then looking into the future of what kind of elder that I would like to become.
And if it's not too personal a question, Theo, what sort of elder would you like to become?
I would like to become an elder that has experienced, as I said, very much culture of Australia. So I don't just want to live in my small corner of this great country of ours, but I want to be able to not only experience and learn, but come to have an appreciation and an understanding for what it is to be a First Nations person of Australia. And I know the hardest part about that is going to be small differences and differences that may clash culturally. But I really look forward to embracing that challenge and to learn that there is no one way to identify as a First Nation.
Can you tell us about the importance of family in your life and in the lives of First Nations people?
Well, of course, I spoke about my mother, Frances Johnson. Obviously, I wouldn't be here, you know, without my mum. Also, a big part of her core beliefs and being strong in the Indigenous affairs, you know, before I was born in the 80s, so becoming strongly involved through the 70s, all that sort of stuff would have been due to my grandfather, my mother's father, Bowman Theodore Johnson, who helped establish the first Indigenous hostel in Brisbane, in Queensland, first Indigenous hostel. And he was able to establish that through various grants. Looking back at it, it definitely has an impact now on how I want to become a part of the Indigenous community here in Ipswich because of the things that both my grandfather and my mother achieved with that connection. But as I've said, I want to do it in my own way, in a way of growth and openness, understanding of differences. And I also really passionately want to expand those horizons for my daughter so that she can then carry on that torch and really have an understanding of what it is to be, you know, eventually a First Nations woman beyond what I can even imagine at this point. It really is just to sort of pass on the torch and move forward from what I mean by that is from negative political things such as just how things can get really misconstrued in negative ways. That's probably the hardest thing that I've had growing up, identifying as First Nations, is a lot of what my grandfather taught me of who I am and where I come from has since changed through different Native Title Acts, through different mining claims that have come on board. Even our cultural names and our lands have sort of dissolved as things have changed with different parties becoming involved or different families disputing apical ancestors. A lot of turmoil in the way that I, from young to now as a man, identify. There has been a lot of confusion, and I've just tried to find my own peace and my own connection, especially to pass on to my daughter, if that makes sense.
How have you gone about staying hopeful and positive in a society sometimes that, like you said, it has been quite negative? How have you stayed positive?
Well, to stay positive, you have to look at the small things. I am very thankful for the opportunities that I have. I'm very thankful that we can have stable lives and identify as Indigenous. Not to go all the way back to the negative, but we can never really forget about the stolen generation and how much that they went through. I only recently found out within the last 12 months that my own father, Stuart Freshman, was affected by the whole happenings of stolen generation. As I said, I only just found that out. I did not know, but he has managed to achieve what he has achieved in life, and he does not let that define him in any way, and I definitely admire that. And with that taken on board, I'm grateful that I get to proudly identify as a First Nations person, and I'm able to have a stable home life and provide that for my wife and my daughter, and for her to have stable schooling, you know, which is something that I even struggled with growing up, I didn't have a stable schooling. A lot of that then comes back to my mother and her political belief of the oppression of white men and all those sorts of things. Like I said, I don't want to necessarily go and put a negative spin on things, but that's just some of the things that I'm looking to overcome as the man of my own home, and then having my own daughter to raise and be able to give her that stable home and education, and let her know that it's not just her versus the world because of Indigenous heritage, but be proud of her bloodlines and just be proud to be, as I said, an Australian citizen and this great mixing pot of a country that we have.
Theo, if you were to see changes in society, what would you like to see for First Nations people?
The biggest change that I would like to see is to be able to teach the Indigenous history of Australia in schools. And to be specific about that, I mean, there are videos that you can find on YouTube, of all places, about there were First Nations farms, and they weren't just nomads just walking around looking, you know, for bush tucker. There were, they would actually plant farms and come back to certain areas of significance and stay there for quite some time until the seasons would move them along. And then, of course, there have been other visitors to the beautiful continent of Australia besides, obviously, the occupation of the Europeans, not Captain Cook, all that sort of stuff. There are other parts of Australian history that are just sort of there if you look for them, but they're not taught. And I think a big part of reconciliation and coming together is teaching not just one part of Australia's history, but the whole thing as a whole, and everything that we do know and do have evidence for. I think that would be a great way to move forward in a positive light and sort of start to move away from the negative incantations of what some may perceive to be either Australia Day or Invasion Day, depending on which way you look at it. So I think, I know I'm touching on a very touchy subject there, but I'm talking from the point of view of not only our children, but our children's children. If they get taught the full picture of Australia, then I have the greatest hope that we will be able to overcome these issues.
Theo, clearly activism and advocacy runs in your family. What an incredible history you have there. Is this also a reason why you've taken on the role of chairperson?
Most definitely. As I said, I want to connect with the community. I'm not exactly sure what the role entailed when I did take it on board, but I jumped in head first, grateful for the opportunity. And sometimes life gives you an opportunity to do something without really having instruction. But the fact that the opportunity found me, I wasn't going to let that slide. I'm proud to say I'm now in the most comfortable, stable state of life that I've ever been in. And I want to be able to give back to the community. And I think that taking on that role is just a stepping stone in that direction, because I'm grateful for not only that role itself, but the guidance and everything that comes with that. You know, it's not just me trying to get out there. It's like, all right, you have stepped into these shoes. Now you have a certain responsibility to the community, and these are things that need to be done, and there are voices that need to be heard. That's why I've really stepped into that role.
Well, Carers Queensland's very grateful to have you in the role, Theo. How has your life improved? How has your life improved since receiving the NDIS through Carers Queensland?
Probably the biggest difference since receiving the NDIS was probably the aftermath of the COVID lockdown. To be specific with that, when the COVID lockdowns really got into full swing, there was probably about 6 months where I just didn't leave the house, which was all fine at the time, until things sort of started to go back to normal and I found out that I had really bad social anxiety. Something that I'd never had before. I've always been outgoing. I've always been very independent. So much was taken away to the point where it affected me physically because I hadn't been moving for so long. And then even going to the shops afterwards, I would struggle with just the thought of leaving the house, leaving the front door, and then walking in the shop. The fact that there was no seat, because, you know, you had to be COVID safe and everybody had to be like a meter and a half away from each other. There were so many challenges that I didn't know I needed to now overcome because of that 6 months gap in my life, and it was only through my first support worker, who I still currently work with, that I was able to overcome that. And I mean baby steps, like from walking out the front door of my house to my mailbox and back, and then we'd walk a little bit further down the footpath and then come back. I don't even realise what I'm capable of until I have the right supports in place to sort of push me and I can find these personal goals to, like, I never thought that I would ever have weightlifting goals or goals to walk X amount distance on a treadmill or anything. That all sounded ridiculous to me at one point. Like, why would you even do such a thing? But it's only once I realize my limitations really are in my own mind, it's like, all right, I want to find the line between where does my disability, cerebral palsy, begin and where is it just lack of know-how or lack of pushing boundaries. So it really has put me on this journey of self-discovery, not just to get back to where I was before COVID, but to get to a life that I didn't even know that I could have until I started putting these goals in place.
Theo, NAIDOC Week is coming up. What plans do you have to celebrate the theme Keep the Fire Burning Black, Loud and Proud?
Well, I definitely want to go in. We do enjoy going out to NAIDOC and just seeing how not only the Indigenous community, but you know, Ipswich as a whole comes out to celebrate. I'd also like to, with the correct support, I'd like to take my family out to Musgrave Park in Brisbane. That would be a first. My daughter's definitely sort of old enough and, you know, she's okay with loud noises and stuff now. As a young fella growing up in Brisbane, I've been to Musgrave Park quite a few times for NAIDOC Week, but I've never actually taken my little family, my wife and daughter, to Musgrave. So that'll be a family first, and hopefully lots of happy memories to be made and lots of photos to be taken. Might even bump into some family and stuff, who knows.
It's been so great talking to you today, Theo. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me on board, Tracy.
And that was our final interview in this episode with 38-year-old Uibara man, Theo Frescon, chairperson of the Carers Queensland Reconciliation Action Plan in Ipswich. And if you'd like to get involved in one of the many NAIDOC Week events this year, visit the Carers Queensland website or follow the links in the episode transcript. Thanks for joining us at Choice and Control, a Carers Queensland podcast. If you've enjoyed this podcast episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review and share it with your community. For more information about the National Disability Insurance Scheme or Carers Queensland, contact us online at www.carersqld.com.au or call us on 1300 999 636 or head to Facebook and look for Carers Queensland NDIS.